Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 64 of Histories of the Unexpected, in which we demonstrate that everything, and I mean simply everything, has a history, like apricots, bayonets, and canyons. You can tell that I didn't write those.
I wrote that. But for me, Sam, it's eggs, pegs, and begs, quills, wills, and sills, or maybe even pills, bills, and hills.
They don't have to rhyme.
No. And we'll be following the links in our minds as we come across them, explaining how those histories link together in unexpected ways. Who knew, for example, Sam, who knew that the history of skin is in fact all about political communication, snow and disease? Or that the history of the dog is not just about fleas, it's about friendship and civilization itself.
I didn't know those things.
No.
The man sitting opposite me is the ghost of Christmas past himself. It's Professor Extraordinaire of Early Modern British History at Plymouth University. It's James Daybell.
Hello. Hello, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. And the man sitting opposite me is the St. Nicholas of the National Past. It's the famous historical adventurer, the truly wonderful Dr. Sam Willis.
Hello, everyone. This week we're doing a Christmas special.
Hello, happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas. I've become a bit sort of fed up with everyone being really Christmassy and having a Christmas market. And
you did this last year.
Did I?
You're a bit of a Scrooge in Christmas.
Maybe I am deep down.
Deep down. And last year you talked about putting rubbish on Christmas trees.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yes.
That's very creative and quite cool.
Yes.
I'm not doing it to persecute Christmas.
No. But your house, we're recording in Sam's amazing shed.
We are in my shed. So it's on a railway embankment. So if you hear a loud noise coming, it's because there's a train. So
or a dog on a cushion in front of the fire.
Making train noises. Oh, yeah,
but that. Sam's house is amazingly decorated.
Oh, thank you very much.
Don't you think?
Yes.
I was struck.
I haven't decorated my...
Not in here.
Not my shed.
No.
Anyway, what are we doing today, James? We're going to be talking about all things Christmassy. We've got lots of interesting Christmas things, haven't we? Because we thought about doing this because of we've done a chapter on the history of chimneys for
chimneys.
Our book.
Yes.
And we also did chimneys at the London Podcast Festival,
which we
hope is going to come out as a dedicated podcast. We're just waiting to actually get the file.
Yes.
But we thought we'd do a little stuff about chimneys, didn't we?
Yes, a little bit about chimneys and then a little bit of sort of Christmas cheer for everyone.
Yeah.
So for us, the history of Christmas is in fact all about chimneys.
For me, it's all about out-of-body experiences, which I'm going to take you through in a minute.
Oh my god, that's like Christmas Carol.
It is like Christmas Carol.
It's Scrooge's,
but it's more interesting.
Out-of-body experiences.
I've got a very cool example, which is like Scrooge, but I think better. It's a Robert Louis Stevenson one, which no one knows about.
Brilliant.
It is.
Well, what are we going to start with?
Chimneys.
Chimneys. Why don't you start with your surprising discovery up a chimney?
Okay, so one of the things that we talked about with chimneys was how they're a really interesting place in the household, aren't they? Where people put things around the bottom of chimneys. I don't really want to go over it too much because we've got this
thing.
One of the key things is that, which links to the idea of going up and down chimneys, is people putting things up chimneys.
Yeah.
And that means that, so you can either burn stuff and that can go up a chimney, or you can use the chimney as a repository, it might be drafty, you might want to hide things up chimney. And historians have found the most wonderful things up chimneys.
Amazing stuff.
Which have either been put there to be preserved up the chimney or the opposite, to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Obviously, one of the most clear things that people regularly put up chimneys are letters to
Father Christmas.
Letters to Father Christmas.
Santa Claus, St. Nicholas.
Right. So that means that historians and house historians and archaeologists, people investigating old houses and people just doing up their houses, you knock through a wall, you go and explore the chimney, have found the most wonderful examples of letters to Father Christmas. We've got them down back to the Victorian period. There are quite a few from the 20s and 30s, which is interesting. And they're all sort of singed. And they give us a wonderful glimpse into childhood desires and wants from particular periods and in particular locations, which is something that you and I are really interested in.
So absolutely it's fascinating.
This isn't just the history of childhood desires and wants generally.
Yeah.
It's the childhood desires and wants from one particular street in Dublin in 1896,
or
whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a very, very specific thing, which you can get our handles on. But the I think all of the interesting things that I've found hidden up chimneys, or I've read about that were found hidden up chimneys, was this amazing map from the 17th century.
Yeah.
And it was a very rare thing, and it would have been one of only a handful of maps of the world, early printed map of the world from the early 1600s.
Yeah.
And, you know, this would have once been the talk of the town, the talk of a house, the talk of a street, the talk of a city. And then at some point, someone realised that the chimney was a bit drafty, and they stuffed it up the chimney.
And you also found that that children's letter, didn't you, in Dublin
yes.
in 1911?
Yes.
That was by Alfred and Hannah Howard. And it's the sweetest little letter. It's, I want a baby doll and a waterproof with a hood and a pair of gloves and a toffee apple and a gold penny and a silver sixpence and a long toffee.
Like a long toffee? What's that?
A long toffee. It's like one of those Quality Street toffees, I imagine.
Huh.
That you know, sort of long...
A long thing, so not
like
something you chew
like
for a long
time.
Thin,
I don't know.
I think it might be something you chew for a long time.
I think it's.
I think that's like an Edwardian gobstopper.
Yeah.
But that, we were talking about this earlier, raises the interesting question of the history of the list.
Ah.
Aha. Right.
Yes.
So we are going to be talking about what's coming next year. But one of the things we are most excited about doing is the history of the list. So I've written quite a lot of lists today. I've done my Christmas shopping list. I haven't done a list of Father Christmas. My kids have. And there are lots of lists. And if you're walking around town at the moment with everyone doing their Christmas shopping, I keep finding lists on the floor. And early Father Christmas Santa Claus lists is a wonderful example of the history of the list.
It is. I hadn't thought of that. I, too, compiled a list today, having dropped my kids at school.
Mm.
I went to a local hotel and got myself a large coffee and sat down in a very comfortable armchair and constructed a list of chapters and topics for our next secret book.
Oh, yes.
But we can't tell our listeners about
possibly
that.
Possibly not yet, but it's on the not unexpected yet, history of the
it's
Tudors.
It's on the way. It's on the way.
Yes, so we're doing a little series. So we've just done our big book, The Histories of the Unexpected, which basically... there goes a train.
Hello, train.
Hello, train. The Histories of the Unexpected, which presents our idea, everything we've done for the last year, and all sorts of new and exciting things. We're going to do a little series, aren't we?
Yep.
And so your list was a work-based list.
It was a work-based list for you know, things to write in future.
Anyway, lists up chimneys. So I'm talking...
Yes.
My suggestion, my idea here was our Christmas thing. It's kids putting letters to Father Christmas up a chimney. So what's going on with chimneys? Because the other half of it is Father Christmas coming down.
The other half... And this is all about the invention of Christmas.
Hmm.
The invention of Christmas, which is a 19th century American invention, Father Christmas coming down the chimney. You will all know Clement C. Moore's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, which was first published in 1822 and then in the New York Sentinel, 23rd of December, 1823, where he basically describes Father Christmas as a sort of a magic old elf. Am I allowed to read this? Am I allowed to indulge?
Let's do
and
that.
Read?
I'm going to be reading a bit in a minute.
'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, and the chimney's there, in the hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the lustre of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all, as dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the corners they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof, as I drew in my hand and was turning around. Down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes how they twinkled, his dimples how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him explain, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Now, this is one of the first occasions.
It was very well read.
It was incredibly well read. I should go on the stage. But this is one of the first occasions in literature where we have Father Christmas actually coming down the chimney. Bodily coming down the chimney. So it's the invention of him coming down. And if you think about popular representations of him, you know, in cartoons and films and books, the Grinch, you know, Dr. Seuss's serpent-like Grinch coming down, slides down the chimney. Raymond Briggs' Father Christmas comes down the chimney, and there's a wonderful sort of cutaway of the house where you can see him sort of coming down the chimney. The song When Santa Got Stuck Up the Chimney.
Yes, all good. In fact,
I did that when I was 4 years old. There's a picture of me in a nativity.
Not stuck up the chimney.
As Father Christmas.
Oh, right, as Father
in
Christmas.
A
right.
It was a cardboard box.
I'd like to see a photo of you stuck up a chimney.
But this is absolutely new. You would I was actually going to bring it in, but I didn't have time this morning.
That's a shame.
But this is new. I mean, the version that you had of the Christmas sort of St. Nicholas story before that was Washington Irving's Knickerbocker's History of New York, where you see him rattling down the chimney. So what he's doing is he's dropping stuff down the chimney rather than actually coming down himself. And this also links to what you were saying earlier on about the chimney. And the chimney, historically, has always been this sort of portal between the supernatural world and the natural world.
Yeah.
So it's this, and it's this sort of, it's actually, you know, a sort of passageway between them, and something that's a sort of occasioned social anxiety.
Yep.
So it's the kind of it's the place that all the sort of evil goblins and ghosties would sort of come down, which is why another reason why people put things in chimneys. And there's your scare...
Oh, the foot of chimneys.
The foot of chimneys.
Yeah, yeah.
So the scare cats and things like that to sort of keep people away. Or old shoes.
Yeah. A scare cat, if you don't know, is something I've become slightly obsessed with recently when we did our history of cats.
Yeah.
They are cats that are posed in positions of catching mice or rats.
Yeah.
And used in the same way as a scarecrow, to scare crows, except not physically to scare the crow because they're already dead. But it's like a kind of a spell, isn't it? Anyway, but chimneys is one of the places that you would put a scare cat.
Yeah. And supernatural beings, like Father Christmas, have long been associated with chimneys. And if you go back to sort of earlier in history in Greece and Serbia, the Calicanserai are these sort of Christmas goblins who come down the chimney.
What a great
during
name.
Calicanserai, wonderful. Yeah. They come down the chimney and wreak havoc for 12 days over the Christmas period. In Italy, we have Befana, the Christmas witch, who comes down and puts gifts in shoes.
So,
you know, this idea... We should also do something about the invention of stockings.
Yep.
You know, because...
Christmas
stockings. In many cultures...
Legs and stockings.
In many cultures, it's putting shoes.
Yeah.
16th century Holland, St. Nicholas would drop gold coins down the chimney.
I like this noises coming down the chimney. That's really interesting. And actually, I just noted a couple of things here, just to butt in quite rudely.
No, do.
It does raise the question of... see, we haven't got a chimney.
No.
I live in a Victorian house, but it hasn't got a chimney. We've got a wood burner, so we've kind of got a chimney, but it's more of a stove thing. But
how do you explain that to your children?
That's the question. So having to explain how far the Christmas comes down the chimney is very difficult in the modern world, where a large number of people don't live in houses with chimneys. And I think the fact that this story came into being, what were the dates of those? That first example of Father Christmas?
1822, 23.
Right. Chimneys are pretty common in the 1820s. Yeah. And, you know, most people live in a house with an open fire chimney. It's a completely standard thing. Like a window. When you'd have a window, you'd have a chimney. Yeah. We don't have that now. So how do you... How it'd be fascinating to find out how people who live in inner cities, high rises, when people started living on top of each other, that's when chimneys stopped really coming about. And then if the Father Christmas myth changed then, or whether it managed to endure because of it. And we now put things near the chimney, and the kids don't think it's weird that Father Christmas can somehow get through a wood-burning stove pipe. Actually, the only interesting example of someone addressing this... Hang on. I watched a film with the kids the other day, and I don't know what it was called. It's really annoying. But Father Christmas's sleigh has a kind of toolkit on it, right? And each of these devices somehow enabled Father Christmas to get into the house. So it was actually like a toolkit to enable him to get into flats, houses with small chimneys, houses with no chimneys. It was really interesting. There was one which he put down a small chimney and it expanded... Whoa. And allowed him to get access...
It's not Arthur Christmas.
Don't think it was Arthur Christmas, no. But allowed him to get access to it and then out again. So that's the only example of someone actually addressing it. So there is a history that we don't know anything about of the Christmas, Father Christmas story changing in relation to social housing issues. Good night.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Next year.
How was
next
that?
Year. That will be coming to you next
Can
year.
Can someone please research that and tell me? You need to go to somewhere like...
I think children don't think very hard. I think the innocence of childhood allows it to happen. He will teleport in some way.
It doesn't matter.
Through a mouse hole.
As long as you get a present at the end.
I'm just hoping my 6-year-old and 8-year-old haven't twigged. I think my 8-year-old has twigged. Mm. But I told her that if she does, then there won't be any presents.
The other thing I liked about that, she does believe.
She does believe. Well, she doesn't really believe, but I think she's suspending belief in order to have presents and not to ruin her 6-year-old sister's belief in Father Christmas.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So we have one of the funny thing in my family, as I'm a historian and I'm on telly quite a lot, is that I sit down in front of fantasy films like Father Christmas sort of going up chimneys, and I point out all of the things that aren't true to the kids. And I'm like, no, that's not real, because spaceships can't do that.
And you've done that from an early age.
It drives them absolutely nuts, especially if I'm sitting down and watching something like Shrek or Star Wars. And I'm like, no, because Death Star, that's just not real. You know, the physics of Death Stars, that doesn't work like that. Anyway.
You're a spoiled sport.
It drives him potty. Anyway, they cleverly turned it back on me with the Christmas thing and started, like, beating me up for claiming that elves and Father Christmas were not real, which I thought was quite clever.
Very clever.
And it made me feel quite Scroogey.
I bet it does.
The other thing I really liked about your poem, which kicked all this off,
yes.
was the rhythm and meter of it. Can you read the first verse again for me?
If on demand, yes. Yeah.
Do I have to pay for work?
Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a
stop.
Mouse.
Oh, mouse. Okay, right. Do it again and stop the last line, the last word.
Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a...
There we are. Now, everyone listening, you could, it's quite a fun game to guess what the last word of this is. This is doggerel. It's a really nice, very attractive, very accessible form of poetry.
Yeah.
And it has its own history, but it's particularly associated with children's poetry and also with Christmas. Mm. So there are an enormous amount of very famous poems written in doggerel at Christmas. And doggerel's a way... So Chaucer, basically, was well known for his very, very early examples of Christmas of doggerel.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read you another Christmas poem, and I think it's interesting for a number of reasons. My first reason is that I think there is an accepted kind of standard Christmas library of Christmas imagery, right, that exists. It's probably quite complicated, and it probably has its own history, that we now have a different library of Christmas imagery than, say, they had in the 1850s, 1860s.
So I want you to, a toolbox of tropes.
Thank you. So I want everyone to listen out for what you think is Christmas imagery. So in music, Christmas song pretty much has to have sleigh bells in it.
Decent
one, right. But in films and in poetry and stuff, it's the same thing. And this is also written in doggerel, which means you can guess the... I'd like you to have a guess of the missing word to see if you can do it. Can you do that? It's quite long, so you'll only do that at the
beginning.
I will have a go.
Oh,
yeah. I will just do it occasionally, and you've got to jump in with the word.
All right. Can I make things up?
I will tell you if it's right or wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, and everyone listening, you can do it as well. It's like a podcast poetry game, which I've just invented right now.
Okay, brilliant.
Not work. There's a train, everyone. Hello, I wonder where that's going. That's probably going to... It's a long train. Waterloo, I think. Right, here we go. It's called Christmas at Sea by Robert Louis
Stevenson.
Very good. And he was born 1850 and he died in...
No idea.
1894.
Oh,
yeah. Young.
Youngish.
Really young.
I should have known that.
This is a brilliant poem, and it is why I will go on to explain Christmas is all about out-of-body experiences.
Okay.
So he's on a boat, right? Christmas at sea.
Yeah.
The sheets were frozen hard and they cut the naked hand. The decks were like a slide where a seaman scarce could...
Land.
Stand. The wind was a nor'wester blowing squally off the sea, and cliffs and spouting breakers were the only things alee. They heard the surf a-roaring before the break of day, but 'twas only with the peep of light we saw how ill we lay. We tumbled every hand on deck instanter with a shout, and we gave her the main topsail and stood by to go about. All day we tacked and tacked between the south head and the north. All day we hauled the frozen sheets, but got no further forth. All day as cold as charity, in bitter pain and dread, for very life and nature we tacked from head to head. We gave the south a wider berth, for there the tide race roared, but every tack we made we brought the north head close aboard. So as we saw the cliff and houses and the breakers running high, and the coast guard in his garden with his glass against his...
Aye.
The frost was on the village roofs, as white as ocean foam. The good red fires were burning bright in every longshore
home.
The windows sparkled clear and the chimneys volleyed out, and I vow we sniffed the victuals as the vessel went about. The bells upon the church were rung with a mighty jovial cheer, for it's just that I should tell you how, of all days in the...
Yeah.
This day of our adversity was blessed Christmas morn, and the house above the Coast Guards was the house where I was...
born.
Right. Going to pause there. So this is a wonderful story of a guy in a bit of trouble on a big square-rigged ship beneath some cliffs. And he can see through the spyglass there are houses up in the cliffs. So Robert Louis Stevenson was brought up in a lighthouse. So he knows all about Coast Guard cottages. Right. He knows about lighthouses. He can describe storms.
Yeah.
This is when we get into what I would describe as the Christmas out-of-body experience.
Okay.
So he is just telling you, he's looking in through a house, and we just told us that it's actually the house where he was born. What we're not sure about now is what happens next, is whether he's actually looking through in real time, or whether he is just having a bit of a moment and thinking about his family.
Hmm.
So it's a moment of cold, moment of danger, moment of loneliness, and he's thinking about his family on Christmas Day.
His life is rushing before his very eyes.
Oh, well, I saw the pleasant room, the pleasant faces there, my mother's silver spectacles, my father's silver...
hair.
And well, I saw the firelight like a flight of homely elves go dancing round the china plates that stand upon the shelves. And well, I knew the talk they had, the talk that was of me, of the shadow on the household and the sun that went to sea. And oh, the wicked fool I seemed in every kind of way to be here and hauling frozen ropes on blessed Christmas Day. They lit the high sea light and the dark began to fall. All hands to loose to gallant sails, I heard the captain call. By the Lord, she'll never stand it, our first mate Jackson cried. It's the one way or the other, Mr. Jackson, he replied. She staggered to her bearings, but the sails were new and good, and the ship smelt up to windward just as though she understood. As the winter's day was ending in the entry of the night, we cleared the wary headland and passed below the light. And they heaved a mighty breath, every soul on board but me, as they saw her nose again pointing handsome out to sea. But all that I could think of in the darkness and the cold was just that I was leaving home and my folks were growing
old.
Oh! Isn't that brilliant?
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, slightly upsetting.
Yes. Mortality.
What it is, but it is mortality. I love the doggerel of it. You could learn that. Kids could learn that. People could recite it. It's enjoyable. It's inclusive. Everyone gets it. You admire the poetry of it and the story of it.
Yeah.
But this, the key thing for me is this out of body experience as part of the Christmas story, because the one that everyone really knows is. Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol, which is terrific. I listen to it every year. In fact, I've listened to it three times already.
Let's just briefly talk about the out-of-body experiences in the Christmas Carol.
Put me on the spot. Well, we all know the Christmas Carol story, Charles Dickens, which was introduced in serial form at first. And it is the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, who we all know is a miser. And my favourite, actually, is the Muppets Christmas Carol version of it, which is superb. But he is visited by three spirits, the spirit of Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future. And he goes back, an out-of-body experience, and sees his childhood experience. And then he's taken to a sort of present-day Christmas, where, in particular, he goes to the Cratchit household and sees his clerk, Bob Cratchit, and his family, and then he's taken into the future to see himself. And one of the most chilling scenes in that short little novella or story, Christmas story, is where he goes to his own chambers and basically oversees his own deathbed. And there are a series of people who are basically dividing up his things. He doesn't know whose things they're dividing up, and then he discovers that it's in fact him, and he's taken off to see his gravestone. He wakes up from this out-of-body experience and becomes a sort of a new man, and goes to have Christmas lunch with his nephew, and he sends an enormous turkey to the Cratchits, and then he catches Bob coming in late the next day, pretends to sort of be very cross, and then says, "We need to talk about your wages," and he ups his wages and sends him out to get another scuttle of coal to put on the fire, and all is well. So the out-of-body experience and a sort of feel-good Christmas story.
So so this is my concluding thought.
Yes.
It's actually, so Christmas is all to do with these out-of-body experiences, which actually have their own history, and I just Googled them briefly before we started recording, and they're amazing. We could do an entire podcast about out-of-body experiences,
yep. Oh,
which,
yes.
Surprise, surprise, have nothing to do with out-of-body experiences.
Yes.
They're also all sorts of other things. Apparently kids as young as six have them.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I mean, oh, my God.
I've never had one. Why are you sure?
You've already got me riffing. But as a historian, you come across them all the time.
Right. OK, so that's interesting.
Yes.
And what's super interesting about this is this moment in the year, I'm going to argue that everyone basically becomes a historian. They become incredibly self-aware of a way that they are not for the rest of the year. And that self-awareness, that ability to look on your own life with a sort of a certain degree of kind of abstract thought,
yeah,
is one of the key things that historians do. They look on certain periods on the past. They're not judgmental. They study it. They say, that's interesting. Look what's happening there. And this out-of-body experience of everyone stopping down, thinking, looking at your family, admiring your family, looking at your friends, looking at your life as it is now, is a kind of, it's the sort of the essence of what being a historian is. So I think that everyone now, and particularly you podcast listeners, you are becoming closer to being a historian than you were before listening to this podcast, because you're thinking about your own out-of-body experiences and yourself in the abstract.
Very good.
Is that nonsense or interesting?
It's interesting. I think for me, it's not necessarily Christmas. It's that period between Christmas and New Year.
Oh, okay.
That's a sort of, for me, is always a time of real reflection and brings us back to lists. I always make a list of New Year's resolutions every single year.
I was going to suggest we did the list as one of our Christmas specials, but I then changed my mind on the walk with the dog.
Ooh.
Because I suddenly thought, actually, you can do it in the new year when people are making resolutions, and you can talk about Christmas lists.
Yes.
And all sorts of other lists.
Yes. Excellent.
It sounds like fun,
very
doesn't
good.
It?
Can before we end...
Yeah, you've got more.
One of the things that I have various Christmas rituals... one of which is, and we've read you out several sort of, you
know, feeding the cake,
literary pieces. We fed my cake last year. Yes,
everyone listened to our. We did a Christmas podcast last year.
We did a Christmas podcast last year,
in which we feed James's cake, which is not a euphemism.
I haven't made a cake this year, but one of the things I always do is I have a collection of Christmas books, and I read through Christmas books and Christmas stories every year as part of sort of getting me into the Christmas season. And I discovered this year a recording of British Library literary Christmas readings, which is incredible, and I'm halfway through it. But one of the things that I got from it was one of our favourites on this podcast is Samuel Pepys. Mm. And I wanted to end with an extract from Pepys's diary, Thursday the 25th of December, 1662, which was Christmas Day. Up pretty early, leaving my wife not well in bed, and with my boy, it being a most brave, cold and dry, frosty morning, and had a pleasant walk to Whitehall, where I intended to have received the communion with the family, but I came a little too late. So I walked up into the house and spent my time looking over pictures, particularly the ships of King Henry VIII's voyage to Bullen, in other words, Boulogne, marking the great difference between their build then and now. By and by, down to the chapel again, where Bishop Morley preached upon the song of the angels. Glory to God on high, on earth peace and goodwill towards men. Methought he made but a poor sermon, but long, and reprehending the mistaken jollity of the court for the true joy that shall and ought to be on these days, he particularized concerning their excess in plays and gaming, saying that he whose office it is to keep the gamesters in order and within bounds serves but for a second, rather, in a duel meaning the groom porter. Upon which it was worth observing how far they are come from taking the reprehensions of a bishop seriously, that they all laugh in the chapel when he reflected on their ill actions and courses. He did much press us to joy in these public days of joy and hospitality. Hello, train. But one that stood by whispered in my ear that the bishop himself do not spend one groat to the poor himself. The sermon done, a good anthem followed and vials, and then the king came down to receive the sacrament, but I stayed not. But calling my boy from my lord's lodgings and giving Sarah some good advice by my lord's order to be sober and look after the house, I walked home again with great pleasure, and there dined by my wife's bedside with great content, having a mess of brave plum porridge and a roasted pullet for dinner. And I sent for a mince pie abroad, my wife not being well to make any herself yet. After dinner, sat talking a good while with her, her pain being become less, and then to see Sir William Penn a little, and so to my office, practising arithmetic alone, and making an end of last night's book with great content till 11 at night, and so home to supper and to bed.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't it wonderful?
I do love Pepys.
Love him.
Yeah. I'd like one of those mince pies he had, and the plum porridge.
Yes, I know. Mm. And a pullet.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
And if you've enjoyed what you've heard here, do check out historyhit.com and all of the other podcasts that are there. We're very proud to be part of Dan Snow's History Hit podcast network.
We certainly are.
And if you want to find out any more about what we're doing, check out historyhit.com/unexpected. There'll be show notes, there'll be photographs, all sorts of bits and pieces and Christmas goodies. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.